Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. On the Saturday morning edition of the Yard, wanted to record yesterday, but with the change in baseball schedule, it was nearly impossible to put a show together for you guys that would have made sense logistically wise. And not to mention, I got home yesterday. I was tired. Long day at the ball yard, and a lot to talk about. And I want to start the show this way. For some of you, we need to talk. I mean, honestly, we need to talk. You've got some people in your lives that I believe are failing you, and so I'm going to pinch hit for them. Or maybe they just don't have the words to tell you. And so we're going to speak very frankly and candidly this morning about a few things. And the first thing that I'm going to start is with our great Bulldog fans that celebrate every victory. Thank you very much. Thank you. It doesn't matter to sport. It doesn't matter to margin of victory. You just say, you know what, hey, Steve, I've been through some lean years in my life, and I have learned that I'm going to celebrate the positivity that surrounds Mississippi State sports. I have learned my lesson over the years that life is short and death is certain. And so when there is something to celebrate, we're going to celebrate. It doesn't mean that we're going to have a parade. We're not always going to shoot off fireworks. But when we win something, we're going to celebrate. And you know what? Thank you for that. We need more of that in life. But to that self-loathing part of our fan base, we're going to have a very frank discussion this morning. Because I'm not going to do this all baseball season. I'm not. I don't know what you're going to do, but I know what I'm not going to do. And So we went into doubleheader yesterday, and we're going to break that down. We'll kind of go over a few things today. But, you know, we blew out Manhattan in two games, 30-4. And it should have been worse than that. It could have been worse than that. But I tried to prepare you guys that I thought it was going to be a bloodbath this weekend because I think State is really good, and I think Manhattan is really bad. But there is a segment of our fan base. And I started to use some names this morning, but I don't want to embarrass those who love you. There's a segment of our fan base that, and I see a lot of people on Facebook, and it's ridiculous. But when we lose, they gripe, and that's warranted. When we don't win impressively, they gripe. And maybe some of that at times is warranted. You know, there are some games out there that we're happy we won, and some times we don't play well. And then we win big, they gripe. And I made a comment. I'm sure it got deleted because there's some people that run these Facebook groups that don't want honesty. They just want a venting place. They want a meeting place for the self-loathing State fans of the world to unite. And I said this yesterday, and I mean it. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. You that post these comments, these ridiculous, over-the-top, nonsensical comments after we win, you do not have a Mississippi State problem. Mississippi State has a you problem. And Mississippi State deserves a lot better than that. I love Mississippi State with all I have. Dedicated my professional life to the coverage of Mississippi State athletics. And I've never seen anything like this. Yeah, but Steve, it's just Manhattan. And you know what? We beat them 17-3 and 13-1. We scheduled 2 9-inning games and ended up playing 7 because we had to enact the mercy rule. And then I have this discussion on my own message board. Yeah, but Steve, you know, hey, look at who we're playing. You know, we're Mississippi State. Do you know who LSU is playing? You know, in many respects, as much as we hate losing to them, LSU has been the class of the SEC for the last 20 years, I guess you'd say. I think it's fair. Guys, they're playing Purdue-Fort Wayne that won 17 games last year. Tennessee, the defending national champion, opening with Lehigh. This is what we do in non-conference. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And so the thing that I'm going to tell you is this, is we are a really good baseball team, and I'm not just basing that on what we saw yesterday. You know, I've been to, I think, every scrimmage but two, counting the fall and spring training. I believe that's correct. Mike Neame has been to all of them. I got some friends that are Major League Baseball scouts that have come to watch us play, and obviously they know things at a different level that you and I know. We have a really good team. We still have some things to figure out. You got to figure out which pitchers you can trust. You got to figure out which lineup makes the most sense. You got to figure out, do you want a platoon in left? Do you want to have Stallman as a left-handed bat when they throw a right-handed pitcher? And then, you know, maybe you work Mikey O'Brien in at center and slide Chance over in some situations. You have a lot to figure out before we get into SEC play, which is why you play teams like Manhattan in week one. You start figuring some things out. It's the same thing in football, right? You play, you know, and then we like, oh, well, we won, but you just wait till we get to SEC play. What are you cheering for? Are you trying to bring misery into it? You just want to speak this into existence? You may recall this baseball program last year lost a pair of midweek games to Austin Peay. Now, granted, it was a good Austin Peay team, but Mississippi State should never lose to Austin Peay in anything. We also lost to Central Arkansas, again, in a midweek game of baseball. We had 4 quad four losses. That prevented us from hosting. And so we go out and take care of business in a very dominant fashion. And that's still not enough for some people. So what I'm going to do is focus our energies on the people that it is enough for, the people that truly love Mississippi State, because some people just want internet credibility, and I'm not here to give it to them. But I just think Mississippi State deserves a lot better. And I think a lot of this is born of ego. I think there's this segment of the fan base that, and them and their sources, right? Their sources. My source was Zach Selman. Maybe you've got a better one. But people are like, you know, all over the Facebook groups and the message boards. And, you know, 2 years ago, it's like, oh, yeah, we're firing them on us and this is going to happen. And you know, not only did it not happen, we bounced back last year and we, you know, we're in a regional. And again, that segment's like, oh, you know, that's not enough, though. It's not enough, you know. And then people coming out with all this, you know, well, Lamonis is on the hot seat this year. Guys, I'm here to tell you that's not true. There's always pressure at Mississippi State baseball, always. There's always expectations. And we have to have coaches and players and staffers that embrace those expectations because we have a fan base that expects to go to Omaha every year. Whether that's warranted or not, that is the expectation. We're not just happy making the tournament. Last year was a step in the right direction, but there's many of us at times we look back and say, you know what, if we'd found a way to beat Virginia, we'd have been hosting Kansas State in a super at Dirty Noble Field, and you know what, hey, when we do that, we typically go to Omaha, right? So even for those of you that had such meager expectations of 2024, and you thought it wasn't a good team, at the end, you know, when the regional started, you're thinking, hey, we can get to Omaha, right? So I just want to make sure that we get that out there before we even discuss anything else. We're not going to do it, okay? We are not going to do it. We are not going to sit here and pick apart every single game. that Mississippi State wins to find something to be miserable about. I just think Mississippi State deserves so much better than that. You know, it's like I look around sometimes, and you know, like the Arkansas Razorback family. You know what? Their attitudes are, man, I'm a Razorback and I love it. And you know what? We might not always win as much as we want, but we're a family. We're the Razorbacks. And, you know, and what's interesting, too, is like it doesn't matter if it's a coach, a president, or administrator, or whatever. They feel like, hey, we are a family. You're here to serve us. You know, one of the things that I love about OSU is everything's a big deal. Everything is a big deal. It doesn't matter who they win against and what sport it is, it's a big deal. They celebrate everything. And the Cajun people are kind of like that. You know, they're ready to party anyway. And one of the things that I admire about Ole Miss folks, I mean, they can talk themselves into anything, right? Like, hey, we played like a great team today, you know. And, hey, let's get behind it. On the other hand of that, we got some people in our fan base, and I think maybe it's because of all those years of us not winning anything significant, that people are always projecting negativity. And it's wrong. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. Love Bulldog Burger Company. May have some Bulldog Burger Company today, if not definitely tomorrow. I need some Bulldog Burger Company in my life sooner rather than later. Gonna have the spring rolls because, again, I've been working hard here as of late. I don't want to look peaked, right? I got to get that boost that only the spring rolls provide. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. Probably gonna get Pimentology add bacon. Probably that's the move for me. It is a regular move for me, but there are some times that I'll go months without getting it because there's so many great things on the menu. I like to change things up a little bit. Some days I just kind of prefer that BLT salad. You know, some days you just want to eat like really fresh. You know what I mean? Like you just get some green vegetables in your life and you want to have that salad. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. It's up to you. But no matter what you're craving, Bulldog Burger Company can satisfy that need in your life. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Rich and Floyd area. Have the spring rolls to make you and better, you and everybody around you better looking, and then get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's take a quick look back. Because it was a doubleheader, you know, I'm not going to sit here and just break every single piece of minutia down in this ballgame. But let's start with Pico. Now, we started talking about Pico as a projected game one starter for Mississippi State back in the summer months. And I think one of the things that that's an important part of our relationship is that I get to talk to these coaches regularly. And you don't. Okay, that's not me dunking on you. I guess in some ways I'm just trying to validate the need to be in your life. But I was told, you know, pretty early on, you know, shortly after the season ended last year, that, you know, Pico is going to be in the mix to be the Friday night guy. And you remember last year, you know, Pico came back, and, you know, I remember, you know, the game at Memphis, and, you know, just it took a little while to kind of get him going. You know, he'd missed a lot of time. You know, he didn't have the UCL tear, but it was just kind of a matter of time. And that's one of the reasons that it kind of enabled him to come back, not the fact that, besides the fact that Pico has an incredible work ethic. Incredible work ethic. And he looked as good as he could possibly look yesterday. Absolutely outstanding. And anybody that watched the game, you saw it for what it was. And Pico, a guy that doesn't really enjoy doing the media, I think he's better one-on-one than in front of everybody. Like, I've had some interaction with him when it's just me and him. He's a different cat, man, when he's up there in front of the whole media. But it's funny that a guy like that can go out there on the mound and just kind of be so free. And I think I've shared with you guys before, one thing that kind of, you know, it's funny to me is seeing how competitive Pico is on the mound. You know, guys will kind of linger around up there, and he's like, get in the box. I loved it. So we'll go to the pitching side of this. Pico gives you five innings, very efficient innings, 69 nice pitches, one hit, no walks, 11 strikeouts. I don't care if we're throwing against a T-ball team. Those are good numbers. And if I remember correctly yesterday, it was like, I'm like 70% strikes. A lot of swing and miss, too. Just impressive. You know, I mean, it's just, when you talk about if before the season, if we had put together and said, okay, what if we could construct Pico's first start, what do we want to see? Well, you know, Steve, I'd like to see him work, you know, five innings. You know, we want to stretch him out as we go, but if we can get five innings out of him and leave with a lead, we'd be in good shape. Well, boy, do we ever leave with a lead. Well, you know, I'd like to have a 3-1 strikeout to walk mix. Not a lot of walks, you know. If we could limit walks, it'd be great. Well, yeah, that's what we do, right? You know, probably going to get hit a little bit. Well, you know, again, just the one hit, 11 Ks, and zero walks. And the misses were small, unless he wanted to miss. There were some times he tried to get some chase. Very efficient in everything he did. Three flyouts, two groundouts. And that was the 2 years ago. It was like, you know, Pico was it's 3 years ago now. Goodness, it was 2022. Anyway, Pico's freshman year, he was kind of the fly ball pitcher, right? I mean, when he was on his game, you know, he's getting soft contact and kind of getting routine fly balls. The three flyouts, two groundouts, and then 11 Ks. You could not have asked for anything more than Pico, and I think we got more than we asked for. Outstanding effort. Chuck Foster, also known as Charlie Foster, made his college debut. He does walk one guy, but he gets a couple punchies too. One inning pitch, 19 pitches thrown within the inning. Just, you know, efficient. And I really thought maybe on the walk we got squeezed a little bit. Now, he is a little bit of a high-energy guy, you know, and that's, you know, Justin Parker is going to have to kind of teach him how to work deeper in games, right? But this is a future weekend guy for us. I think he could be a Friday night guy in his career. You know, I would say two-thirds of your rotation for next year are already on campus, and Charlie's one of those thirds. And so it was good to get him out there. I mean, did you expect that? The first guy out of the bullpen on the season would be Charlie Foster. I don't think we expected that. But that's what we got. And that says a lot about what I think Chris Simonis and Justin Parker think about Chuck Foster, is that they can roll him out there the very first game of the year. Now, granted, you know, the crowd wasn't what it's going to be in a month. But he handled it pretty well, and it's probably a good time to do it. Let's just go ahead and introduce him here. But I think, again, it speaks a lot about the trust level in this freshman who's going to throw big innings for us. Probably the really only downside of the pitching, the full day, and I hate it because I like the kid a lot, Jacob Pruitt. Jacob struggled. He comes in there, and you know, you're just trying to finish up a shutout. And lost the release point a little bit, and we've seen some of this with him. He'll have an outing or two in a row where he's absolutely dominant. Then he has ones where he can't hit it. There's tons of movement with him, and so I think sometimes, kind of like with Schilke last year, I mean, you got to have the right umpire too, you know, because you know Cam was a little funky, Jacob's a little funky, not as funky as the arm slot monster, Cam Schilke, but Jacob, tons and tons and tons of movement. You know, he had the hit by pitch. He had a couple walks, you know, and, you know, got hit a little bit. He's better than what you saw yesterday. But what you saw yesterday has kind of been indicative of what we've seen in scrimmages some of the time. Again, he'll have two or three good outings and then have one like that. But, yeah, he's better than that. So there's...
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
A better representation of his skill set that I think you'll see. Moving to offensive numbers here. You know, Sawyer Reeves did lead off as we expected. Ross Highfield slides in at the two spot. Man, what a great day for Ross Highfield, other than the miscue in right field. And, you know, Lamontis had a kind of a laugh about that later. It's a good thing we can laugh about it. But one of the things that you guys saw yesterday, three things. You saw Ross can control the running game. That was a big problem at times. His freshman year. Tremendous improvement. In game one, two at-bats, two hits, two runs, two RBIs, and a walk. Incredible. Ross is willing to let you walk him. He's not going to press. And again, this is the maturation of a young high school star. Now with a couple years of college experience under his belt, even though he didn't play much last year due to the injury. But you're seeing a much more polished version of Ross. I think Ross Highfield is a day two draft pick. That's what I think. I've thought that from the beginning of his career. I'm more convinced of that now. And again, offensively, what you're seeing from him is kind of indicative of what we saw in the scrimmages. Ace Reese, your three-hole hitter. Of course, he hits the first home run of the year. In game one, he's 2-for-3 with three runs scored and an RBI. Also has a walk. I'm telling you, this guy's going to be in the mix for SEC Player of the Year. He may not get it, but he's going to put up some big numbers. Noah Sullivan, the first RBIs of the year. Love guys that go backside gap right there. And he ends up 1-for-1 and also takes a couple of walks too. You got to have guys in the middle of the order that are willing to kind of do that. And that's one thing that hurt us last year, right? There were times before Connor Heisek kind of got going that, hey, if it didn't happen with Dakota or Hunter, it wasn't going to happen. And there's a lot of pressure on those guys. He's like, so you swing it, pitches out of the zone. He's like, I can't let him walk me. There's nobody behind me that can really do damage. True or untrue, that's how guys feel. Well, when you've got Ace Reese and then Noah Sullivan at the four hole, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're willing to take a walk because Hunter Hines is behind you, and Hunter hitting fifth, I think the composition of lineup probably hides him a little bit, like as much as you could hide number 44. But you look at him yesterday, game one, right? He hits the first tank of his season. Do you remember what it was like last year? Do you? I was curious about this too, so we're going to look this up together. You remember he was really pressing early in the year, and it took him forever to get that first home run. And, you know, he would say in media, well, I'm just being patient, taking what they're giving me. That wasn't true. It wasn't true. And you guys know it wasn't true. But it's so interesting kind of looking back. And I thought when that ball left the yard, I said, good for Hunter. He gets the first one, right? And so now we can kind of really lock in and settle. And there's so much of that last year. It just felt like we could never find that even equilibrium as an offense. You know, like some days we go out there, you know, put up a dozen runs on Florida. You know, we'd go out there and just bang. You know, we'd go bang LSU around, 10-run rule LSU. And then you go play Central Arkansas and you can't hit the ball at the infield. You know, it's like that's what I think Hunter brings to the table. You get a very focused and relaxed Hunter Hines. You have a very, very impressive offensive system, especially in the middle of that order. And that's why you go out and you get an Ace Reese and you get a Hunter Hines. Excuse me, Noah Sullivan. We already had the Hunter Hines. But, yeah, I've got his 2024 numbers up right here. He hits his first home run of 2024, and it was a wall scraper, and he didn't hit those. March 9th against Evansville. March 9th. So we can kind of do the math here together. Let's see, that's 9, 12. Yeah, 14 games. I think that's right. 14 games before he hits his first home run. And then, next thing you know, we get an SEC play, he starts swinging a pretty good bat. But I think getting that first round tripper out of the way is not only good for Hunter, but great for Mississippi State. And, again, working through this thing, we won't have to break down everybody. But in game one, of course, Noah Sullivan with that backside gap, bases clearing double. Bryce Chance has a double and very laggy, right? It's kind of one of those in-betweens, right? And it's just Bryce hustling being Bryce. Outfielder's kind of taking his time. Bryce is like, I'll just take the bag, and he does. Michael O'Brien with a double. That's great to see. You remember last year his very first hit went off of Ethan Pulliam. This one went off the green grass. And, of course, Ace Reese, Hunter Hines, and Aaron Downs. And, Jake and I last year, they used to run analytics. We would travel, and we'd see Aaron Downs put on these incredible shows in BP. And I was like, man, is today A-Day? And Jake said, yeah, today may be A-Day. And then he never could get one out of there. Well, yesterday he gets one out, and Aaron, 7 RBIs on the day, too. 7 RBIs, excuse me. But, State wins the game handily. And I think if you're a Mississippi State fan, and you should be if you listen to the show, I think one of the things you got to get excited about is you now see the length in this lineup. How many times last year did we come up and you'd say, you know what, we got to get around the top of the order. We just don't have anything in the bottom third. Guys, teams that find a consistent game three starter and get production out of bottom third of their order, go to Omaha. It's as simple as that. It's that challenge for every team in the country to find a consistent third starter and get production out of 7, 8, 9. And I, based on what the evidence we have available, I don't know if we've got the consistent third starter lined up yet, but I do think we've got the production for the bottom third on the way. All right, game two, and State trailed for the first time of the season in this game, and then it was all Bulldogs the rest of the way. But, Carson Ligon, and this was kind of indicative of what we've seen in scrimmage games, is that Ligon goes out early and is too reliant on the fastball, trying to establish the fastball, and it takes him a little while to kind of find, the changeup. And so it's difficult to keep people off the fastball. And I don't know what his spin rate on the fastball is, even though his analytics have improved. I mean, he's gassed it up there, 97, 98. But I don't know that maybe it has the movement of, say, a Will Bednar. The velo is there. I don't know that the movement is. But he settled down, and the plan was for Carson just to go four. But, it starts off a little rougher than maybe it should have. 4 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 8 strikeouts, 8 walks, had one wild pitch. And if you saw that stat line, like if you didn't watch the game and you just saw this, you'd say, hey, that's good. That's a good first start. And you know what? It is. However, I thought, we had to settle in. And I think that's probably the most important aspect of it, is we got to get him started a little bit quicker. Maybe we need to throw a simulated inning in the bullpen. I'm not going to question Justin Parker. He'll figure all that stuff out. But, the first inning, went fairly well. We get the ground out, a fly out. I'm already messing up my stuff here. We get the line out right to the pitcher, get a strikeout swinging, and we give up a single, and then we get a K. So put out 1-2 Ks. So you start thinking, okay, the three-hole hitter gets a hit. We're able to navigate through that. And so I'm thinking, hey, based on what we've seen, from Carson, maybe he's settled in. Well, it's inning two that we give up back-to-back hits. give up a double to right field. Trevor Henson, their top home run hitter last year, rips that ball in the gap. And then Andrus Lewis, a guy that hit about a buck 80 last year, he singled through the right side, and then Ross overruns it, which allows the run to score. And then from there, things really kind of began to settle a little bit. We get a strikeout looking, get a ground out, and then another ground out to the pitcher. So he clearly fills the position well. And so one hit in the first and then two in the second. And from there, Carson really looked good. Tackless gives up, gets a single to open the third. And from there, it was all Ligon. He gets a strikeout, a ground out to the pitcher, and another strikeout, and comes back out in the fourth. And Henson, the guy that took him deep the time before with that big double in the gap, he strikes him out on three pitches, another strikeout, and then a strikeout. So, again, they hit him a little bit early, but he closes the outing, striking out five of the last six that he faced. And so there's something to build upon there. And again, I understand that. I mean, you want people to go out there with that just, you know, Greg Maddux level efficiency. That's just not going to happen, especially in the college game. It doesn't happen in the big league game very often. You know, there's a reason that they draft a bunch of pitchers every single year. But again, I think Ligon, there's some things to build upon. And again, the emotion of the moment sometimes can be a liar. And you go back and look and say, you know what, hey, gives up four hits over the three innings. You know, and then from there, kind of rolls on with it. You know, again, that leadoff single in the third proved to be the last, you know, batter to reach. You know, and he didn't walk anybody. Eight Ks, zero walks. Matter of fact, State on the day, and in game two, 13 Ks, zero walks. And again, I don't care if you're pitching against a T-ball team. If that's the number, that's the number. Ben Davis, a guy that's kind of been a little bit of a hidden gem. You know, he can catch and pitch, and man, he was throwing some nasty stuff yesterday. And again, how many of you expected him to be the first guy out of the bullpen in game two? Yeah, I think even those astute followers of Mississippi State baseball were maybe somewhat surprised by that. But I think a lot of it's just, hey, we know this guy's going to be able to help us in SEC play, and he can really throw it, and it's filthy. It's not the flat fastball that's just built on B-Lo. He gets a lot of sink. Ben goes two innings, allows one hit, four strikeouts, zero walks. He gets the ground out and just goes out there and shoves. Chase Hungate comes in and Chase does what Chase does. He pitches the last inning, gives up a hit, 1K, a couple ground outs. That's what I'm trying to get to. So, again, looking at the numbers, the box score only, extremely efficient. Extremely. You have to pitch at seven innings. You give up six, a little bit less than a hit per. One run, 13 Ks, no walks. Man, you got to love that. All right, you look at the hidden side of this, and they threw Brad Grasser, and Brad, of course, a transfer from Chattahoochee Valley. I thought he came out and competed well. I mean, I thought Braden Romero looked, and maybe it was just nerves. You know, they bring Romero out in that first game. I thought he looked shell-shocked early. I didn't think Grasser did. And again, he ends up throwing 90 pitches in just over, you know, 4 2/3. But I thought he came out and competed, and with that arm slot, he kind of, you know, kept us off balance a little bit. He did have three hit by pitches, but we got to him. You know, we really got to everybody throughout there yesterday. But I thought the Grasser kid competed. Look at the hitting numbers for State. You know, again, everybody gets to play, right? And that makes for a happy locker room. We talked about Ross again. He goes 1-for-2, also has two walks. Goodness, he may be leading the nation in on-base percentage. Ace actually goes 1-for-3, takes a walk. And there are going to be games like that. People are going to pitch around him. Sullivan goes 1-for-2. In the ballgame, and you know, looking ahead here, Hunter Hines, 1-for-3, had a nice big hit to right. Reed Stallman, the guy that we signed to replace Hunter Hines because we thought Hunter was going to get drafted, spent some time in left and then was a pinch hitter late, and he hits the 3-run home run to walk us off. Bryce Chance, really good ball game, 3-for-4. Three runs scored, also had the RBI. Aaron Downs, of course, ends up with seven RBI between the two games. He goes 2 for 3. And you start thinking, goodness, Steve, why don't we just start him, you know? Dylan Cup and the 9-hole, how about this? He goes 0 for 1, but 3 walks. You talk about flipping the order. When you got a guy down there that's it's got a good eye, willing to walk and give the top of the order a chance to hit with a man on, that's good stuff. Highfield had a double in the game. Hines with a double. Chance with a double. Nolan Stevens with a nice RBI double. And Stallman, the only home run hitter in game two. And, of course, Aaron Downs also with the sacrifice fly there. Highfield with a stolen base. Fry with a stolen base. And, you know, we made the one error. And I thought defensively, as a team, we played really good in the two ball games. Now, no game today, and it turns out we probably could have played today, but there's kind of a silver lining in all of that, too. Because, you know, we're playing Southern Miss on Tuesday. So rather than, now, so we get two of them out of the way yesterday. We get a day of rest today. We'll play tomorrow, a day of rest Monday, and then play Southern Miss on Tuesday. Well, unless the weather changes things for Southern Miss, they're playing four games this weekend. The one Friday, two today, one on Sunday, a day of rest, and then have to turn around and play us. That's four games in a close proximity. And let's just kind of take Friday out of the whole thing. Like, let's just look at, you know, State versus Southern Miss in that respect. So between Saturday and Monday, we're going to play one game. They're going to play three. So that's a lot. Puts a lot of pressure on your bullpen. And I'm sure Southern Miss, Oz is going to do a great job, and they're going to have somebody ready to go with a great game plan, and that's cool. But, yeah, we need to go down there and win that ball game. But before we do, we got to take care of Manhattan, and that's going to be Sunday as the Bulldogs go for the sweep. It's going to be a 1 p.m. start. You can watch on the ESPN app. Stone Simmons will be your starter. For Mississippi State, kind of the long-awaited return to the mound for a guy that's been great to Mississippi State, you know, the last link, you know, to the 2021 NAFL championship team. Manhattan will throw Joe Duffield. He was a returner, 0-3 guy last year. He only threw 5 innings. They put him out there in some situations, and you know, he didn't come through. But it's, you know, it's interesting. 0-3 was the record. I'm pulling his numbers up right here. I want to say it was 10.13 or 10.18 last year as an ERA. And again, to be fair to the kid, yeah, it's 10.13. He goes 5 1/3, allows 9 hits, 14 runs, but only 6 of them are earned. Says a lot about, you know, what their defense looked like last year. But 5 strikeouts, you know, but big, you know, physical right-handed guy. 6'4", 205 pounds, kind of has it all set up, but that's who we're going to face. So we got to go take care of business tomorrow, and that's the thing about today. We got a big basketball game that we're going to talk about after our top 10 list, and then we'll kind of take a look around the region and kind of see how baseball's going for everybody else. But yeah, it's a chance for us to get out of the gate. You know, you remember this time last year, right? We take 2 of 3 from Air Force. We blow the save in game two. And then we get swept at home by Austin Peay. Two games that we should have won. And both, you know, complete meltdown by the bullpen in both of those games. And so we were 2-3 before we even had a chance to get comfortable. And so the best thing that Mississippi State and Chris Simonis and the Bulldogs can do for the rest of us and for each other, you know, let's get through these first couple of weeks. You know, see if we can get through these first couple of weeks without dropping any games. That'll begin to kind of build some confidence, not just within the fan base, but within the team. And guys, I'm telling you, this offense has a chance to be really special. Those are my feelings about it, and I hope that you'll come out and be a part of that. All right, time for today's top 10 list, as always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry, And he will be a friend to you. You won't realize what a great friend he could be when you think about how difficult the mortgage lending process can be. Don't guess. Don't overthink it. Stick with Blair Chandler. 24 years of experience in this industry. Phone number 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Blair will make this process a lot easier to navigate. Yeah, because underwriters sometimes, I think sometimes they just want to mess with loan originators. Like, it's a way, we need like a pint of blood and like a, you know, lock of their kid's first haircut. You know, there's things they ask for that just aren't relevant, it feels like. But Blair can structure your loan in a way that gives you the best chance for approval and get that pre-qualification letter. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. Go ahead and get pre-approved for your financing, and then you can kind of shop within your means. That really gets your real estate agent motivated. And we have some amazing real estate agents within this fan base that work regularly with Blair. Blair's licensed to practice in multiple states. Again, 24 years of experience. Get his know-how working for you. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. All right, so we got a message on the Twitter machine from @DogPerry. His first initial is S. So the Dog Perry checking in and said, "Hey, Steve, what about a Pearl Jam list?" We did that, you know, maybe 5 years ago. But when you're talking about the quintessential band of the 90s, probably it's worth doing again. And, you know, that's what happens. Like, things change in your life. And I thought about some ones that didn't make the list this time. And sometimes I work really hard to get all the albums represented in these lists. This time I just said, you know, I'm just going to write down my top 10 favorite songs, and then I'll rank them. So because when you've got a catalog that extensive, you know, at different points of your life, songs mean more to you. But I can tell you, man, when we had a chance, Dana and I had a chance with her baby sister, Mandy. We saw Urge Overkill and Pearl Jam on the Versus Tour at Kiefer down in New Orleans. And the night of the show, they got arrested at Pat O'Brien's with Jack McDowell, pitcher from the White Sox. So funny how that works. But it was a great show. Urge Overkill opened up the show with Crack Babies. And, of course, the big hit for them was Black Havana at the time. It was a great show. We're front row. Could not have been a better experience. And, of course, I'm in recovery. Eddie Vedder offered me a glass of wine to drink. I had to pass on that. And some would say, "Steve, how could you do that?" Well, my recovery is very important to me, no matter who's offering. And I was back, I was only a couple years sober back then, and I still passed. So I'm able to celebrate over 33 years today because of the fact that I passed on that. But yeah, we had a great time, and I remember we were so excited to see Pearl Jam, and like they sold out two shows in like 10 minutes, maybe 20, and then they decided to open a third show. We were fortunate enough to get tickets to that third show, but it's a great night, and we had a countdown up. Like, I had the little 3M sticky notes, and I wrote down how many days it was to Pearl Jam because I was so excited to see them. And every day I'd get up and I'd take that sticker off there. And every day everybody would walk by the Nintendo and the TV. And we had Super NES back then. And say 47 days to Pearl Jam. We couldn't wait. We got a chance to go. And it's one of my fondest memories when it comes to going to shows with the bride. Is going to see Pearl Jam. Being front row. Really, as they were really ascending as one of the biggest bands in the world. And they still have a huge following. Still sell out arenas all over the country and around the world. So we're going to celebrate in honor of the Dog Perry today. All right, so this is my current top 10 Pearl Jam songs. I mean, just as they landed with me today, this is the top 10. Number 10, I love the track Hail Hail. I love it. I always have. If memory serves me correct, that was the lead single on the No Code album. Is that right? Is that right? It's been a while, but I dig that track, and I think you guys will too. There's just so much about that album. Things kind of changed a little bit after Vitalogy, you know, because they had their big, their big showdown, I guess, with Ticketmaster, because Ticketmaster was exploiting all of us, trying to get more money from us. And, you know, Yield was a decent album. But, yeah, I think that was No Code. And, yes, it was. That was the lead track on No Code. And there are going to be a couple of the newer albums, like, you know, Backspacer and Lightning Bolt, that we don't have represented on our list today. Well, I guess Backspacer, we do have one. Lightning Bolt is actually a pretty good album. Siren's a good track on there. And even Let the Records Play, good track there. All right, number nine, a song from Backspacer. A good friend of mine went through a divorce, and this song kind of became her theme song for life. And it's a track called Just Breathe. And it's a very poignant song. You know, it's like, you know, I'm very fortunate that I can count on two hands, you know, those that I love and those that love me, you know, when so many people have one or two or have none, you know. And I think that's an important aspect. And one of the things that she told me that, you know, when she went through a divorce, she said, I found out who my people were. You know, a lot of people that she thought were friends and people that were kind of allied with her, you know, in a divorce, it seems like, you know, people pick a side. And even if they don't know the details behind the breakup, but that is a song that is always has been a very important one. Of course, it's released back in 2009, so just over 15 years ago now. But a song that I think, no matter if you like rock and roll or not, I think you'll like this one because it's more of a tuned down, chill type song. But the message behind it, very, very good. All right, number eight, and a lot of people love this one, and many people would have this number one. But I'm not going to be a Pearl Jam hipster and just kind of go with the dark track, you know. It really is dark, but it's Black, right? And if the lyric in there that really resonates to people is, you know, someday you're going to be a beautiful star in somebody else's sky, but why could it not be mine? We've all gone through that when you just love somebody so incredibly much, but it's not reciprocated at the level that it should be. And I think that's why there's so much authenticity and it resonates so much with people, because we've all had those experiences where we have just given all of ourselves to somebody else. And in many respects, because we love them so much, we're even willing to take half of them. But for them to not entertain the relationship is actually the best thing for us, because we all deserve to have a biggest fan. We all deserve somebody that thinks we're the greatest thing that ever happened. And unfortunately, most people never find that. All right, number seven, kind of along those lines too. I remember when this album came out, and this is one of those songs too, that again, kind of like Just Breathe, just kind of a tuned down track that's got an incredible message. And at the time, I had somebody that worked with me that was kind of going through a difficult time and ultimately got divorced. And it took her a long time to take the step. Because you get accustomed, you get comfortable, and it's like, you know, hey, I can deal with this because it's best for my children or it's best for me, and you know, I don't want to have to deal with the embarrassment of having to go home and all the financial upheaval that goes along with a divorce. But the track is Better Man. You know, she smiles and says she's in love with him, can't find a better man. Well, you know, I don't know that she ever did, but here's the thing that I know about relationships. For me, I would rather have a hole in my life than a butthole. Now, you can use whatever language that you need, right? But I would rather be alone than be mistreated. Now, there is a misery in both, but I would rather be alone and have the prospect of something else than to be in a relationship that is, you know, everybody uses the word toxic, but let's just say unfulfilling. I would rather be alone than be in an unfulfilled relationship where I am giving so much more than the other person. There has got to be some value in that aspect of it. And there's so many people that live a charade in life, and you know those people, and perhaps maybe you're one of those people. It's so funny. And it's funny and maybe in a sad way more than a humorous way. I deal with a lot of people in recovery, and I've had some people they'll contact me on Facebook or whatever, and you know, sometimes it'll be a friend of a friend or sometimes a complete stranger. And if you looked at their social media accounts, you would never know that there is strife in their life. You'd never know. You know, because everybody puts their best foot forward on social media. You know, some people overshare, and there are a lot of people out there that just kind of put up this facade that everything is fine. You know, we had a discussion here recently about, you know, when's the last time somebody asked you if you were okay? I mean, honestly, when's the last time somebody asked you if you were okay? Yeah, and you begin to think about that and ruminate on that, you can kind of work yourself into a bit of a depression, right? So I'm here to tell you that I love you and I want you to be okay. And if you're not okay and you sometimes want to talk to somebody outside of your circle, anonymity is guaranteed, you feel free to hit me up. I would rather do that than go to your funeral or to see you waste away your days in a life that is not both fulfilling and satisfying. And there are going to be days when, you know, it's not a ticker tape parade every day. And I think that that's one of the things, too, and I don't want to preach too much about this, but one of the things that I think is dangerous for younger people is that there is this illusion that so many people are creating. And it happens in Hollywood and everything else. If you watch somebody's Netflix, series or whatever, and you know they make it seem like everybody is doing something amazing with their life other than you. And then all of a sudden you think, hey, well, I'm going to grow up and that's how life is going to be. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not the case. You know, more times than not, you're going to end up doing something other than being a superstar. You know, the world tells you that we should all be kings and queens, and that's just not true. Some of us have to be the jester. You know, and some of us have to be workaday. You know, we're not all going to be celebrities, despite what Instagram's algorithm tries to tell you. You know, you don't have to take your clothes off to get engagement. And I think it's kind of a sad state of affairs that we have painted society in such a way that this is the only way that you can get friends. And it's funny, I watched one of those podcast reels here recently. You know, you scroll and eventually weird things pop up. Maybe not things you follow, but things that are sometimes important. And the panelists asked four young ladies that are all in their early 20s, would you rather have a meaningful relationship that lasted years, or would you rather have Instagram? And all of them voted that they would rather have Instagram. It's one of the saddest things I've ever heard in my life. Rather than have a meaningful relationship with somebody that truly cares about you, that's willing to invest in your life and to make your life their life and have a path together, that we would rather have the approval and comments and likes and hearts from complete strangers. That is terrible. Number six off the Verses album, and love this one. It's the number one, I believe it was the first or second track on that album, but it's Why Go. And I remember that night we heard him play it. It was tremendous. All right, number five, going back to the 10 album, which many people believe is the defining album of that era, it's Even Flow. And all of a sudden when that song came out, it was like, well, this is a little bit different than what I'm used to. And then you buy the album and you realize there was some real girth to the Pearl Jam experience. All right, number four. This is one of those songs, too. It was huge, right? Huge. And it's still huge in the eyes of many young ladies. But it's a track called Daughter. In Dennis Rodman's book, he writes about his relationship with Pearl Jam and about the song. And I don't want my girls to ever feel that way. I love my girls. And there are times that sometimes I call Audrey just individually. You know, you have the fam chat, right? Everybody has the fam chat. And everybody kind of puts their news and what's going on in there. But sometimes his dad and his mom, you need to make that phone call. You know, and I think that's one of those things, too, that you know, we talk so much about how the same-sex parent is so incredibly important as you pattern, you know, the plot of your child's life. And that's part of the deal, right? But as you get a little bit older, I think the opposite-sex parent is has a role to play. And I have sat over coffee and watch my oldest daughter cry her eyes out over the loss of a relationship. And I think there's probably some advice that maybe I could offer that my wife could not. You know, just part of the deal. Number one, I think she's better looking than me, and I think my heart's been broken a lot more often than hers. But I think part of the thing, too, is I think for my girls, I have always wanted them to know how much I love them. When they were small and now that they're adults, I want them to know that I'm proud of them, because I think there is a role that I have to play that if I don't fulfill that, somebody else will perhaps lesser values will step in and fill it. So you have to be present. Number three, I think this was the lead single on the Versus album. And I remember when the thing first came out, it was like, are you kidding me? Like, as great as the 10 album was, this is my teaser into album number two. Well, let's just go ahead and buy this. We'll go ahead and pre-buy that at the Sound Shop and go give Francis our money. Shout out to Francis at Sound Shop in Hattiesburg. I think everybody had a crush on her. She ended up dating my friend Clay, who was a guitar player in my band. But Francis, last time I saw her, I think it was in North Park Mall. Married and I think had a kid or two. And then no surprise. But she was, besides the great music, she was the reason you went to Sound Shop instead of going to Camelot or wherever. But Animal, great, great track. Love this one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 against one, 5, 5, 5 against one. Yeah, you know the track. And if I remember correctly, when you open the CD, that's what it says, 5 against 1 on the art. All right, number two. It's Alive, and a very poignant song. And a bass player of mine, his friend, was born with some physical handicaps. Great guy, loved metal, was more of a Metallica and Slayer type guy, to my mother, Love Bone. But he ended up writing a letter to Eddie Vedder, and Eddie wrote him back. And he'd had these physical afflictions his whole life, and like his dad just couldn't deal with it. And so his dad basically abandoned the family. So this guy grew up by his dad. And so he writes this letter to Eddie Vedder. And Eddie wrote him back. And I was already a huge Pearl Jam fan. And when I found out that Eddie had taken the time to handwrite a letter to this friend of a friend, it made me an even bigger fan. It made me realize what a great person Eddie Vedder is. But the song Alive is what they kind of bonded over. It's like, I've been through all these things in my life, but you know what? I'm still alive. And there's so many things in that song that in the verses that like, oh, there's all these things that happen. And that sometimes I remind myself of this track. I'll put it on and I'll just kind of celebrate. I think about, it's easy for me to kind of talk myself into a negative space. It truly is. And I think about the people that I've lost, and I think about, the suicides we've had and the overdoses and the company that I once kept. And how I am kind of the last of the Mohicans in some respects. And all of a sudden, that chorus will just kind of just pop up in my head. You know what? All these things have happened, Steve, but you're still alive. And I'm doing as much good as I possibly can in the world. Number one, for me, and it may be different 6 months from now, but it wasn't just the video, but it was the subject matter of this song. It was so incredibly chilling and challenging and dark at the same time, and it's Jeremy. And I can still listen to that. I remember the very first time that I played that for my kids and made them pay attention. And I just had it on, like in the minivan as we're driving to Disney, but explained the story and explained how Eddie Vedder, they were writing material for the new album, and he ran across this this story. And the Jeremy story is true. You can Google online and find the newspaper accounts of what happened. And Eddie was so incredibly moved and saddened because in many respects he identified with Jeremy, being that person that didn't feel like they had a place. They didn't have a home in society. That's a bad place to be. And at some point, many of us have felt that. And for those of you that have never felt that, then God bless you. God bless you. Because of the fact that it is a place that I don't think anybody should belong. But there are a lot of people that feel that way. I think it's important to understand. And for our, I guess you would say, our protagonist in the Jeremy story, that he shot himself in front of a classroom. It's a true story. It is a true story. And that's, back kind of in the beginning of all of this, craziness with school shootings and things of that nature. And that's something in our society that has to stop. And it's not just, I'm not going to get into a Second Amendment debate with you all, but it's not just about guns. And it's not just about mental health. Some of it has to do with us. And I think that's a conversation that a lot of people aren't ready to have. And Eddie talks about it. I remember picking on the boy. It seemed a harmless little, How many times in our lives, as young people and even as adults, have we been the bully or taken part in that? Because of the fact that, you know, maybe we're all seeking acceptance. And so, you know, hey, well, they're not picking on me, so I'm going to join the side of those bullies because I don't want them picking on me. And some people never grow out of that. And there's a difference between, you know, being a bully and holding people accountable. But when I think about the important songs of my generation, this is one of them. And I would encourage you at times, maybe even spend a little time truly listening to the song, not just hearing it play, but listen to the song and maybe do your own research. And you begin to think about how lonely a place that that young man had to be. And that the only way that he knew to express his pain and frustration with life was to kill himself in front of a classroom. I can't begin to imagine feeling so alone in the world. And not to mention the other kids that maybe had nothing to do with any of this. You know, the fact that they live with that. But it is a very important song, and it gives a very important message. And I think the lesson learned there is to treat people with kindness, because all of us have some things in our wagon that perhaps we didn't pick up that we're having to kind of carry through life. And a little kindness goes a long way. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart. I will be there today from 1 to 3. So you may be a little late, but my socials will have it out there. But 1 to 3, we figure there's people be looking for something to do. Many of you are in Starkville just kind of hanging out and you've got a day off. But yeah, come be with us today at Campus Bookmart 1 to 3. I'll be signing books there. They carry all 7 of my books there. It still feels weird to say that. But while you're there, pick up some great Mississippi State merchandise. Whether it be apparel, gift ideas, tailgating supplies, just kind of knickknacks, diploma frames. I still think that is such an important gift. You know, you've got some spring graduates in your family that'll be crossing that stage in April. You know, be the favorite aunt or grandparent, because they'll, every time that they look at that diploma on the wall in their office or their home, they'll remember, you know what? I remember who gave me that. It's a very thoughtful gift. It is. And I bought both of my girls their Mississippi State diploma frames, and very important to me that we did that. And so you should do that too. If you can't visit them in person, you can visit them courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. Now, when you order online, we can save you some money too. Use promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75, any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at this Mississippi State men's basketball game this evening. I guess this evening we'll have full coverage. Jacob and David are making the trip. You know, taking on Ole Miss, and you know, this is a game we need to get. You know, Bulldogs are 17-7. Guys, it was not a good night against Florida. You guys know it. You know, we had the halftime lead, and we've been a very good second half team. We were not. We got absolutely bushwhacked in that ball game. The final margin was 13. It felt worse. So we'll travel to Oxford, and we're still in the tournament. Okay, projected to still be in the tournament, but we could definitely help our standing by a win today. And let's take a look at kind of what's happened with Ole Miss since we defeated them in overtime in Humphrey Coliseum. And yes, it shouldn't have been that close, but it was. They're a quality team. And they're a team that shoots well from the perimeter, and that's going to probably define the game today. The Rebels are 19-6 overall. They've won 3 games in a row. Now 8-4 in the conference, 11-2 at home. And yeah, so the Pavilion, not an easy place to play. No place in the Southeastern Conference is. But, yeah, they're kind of feeling themselves a little bit. And, so again, we beat them by 3 back on January the 18th. They host A&M that Wednesday and lose by 1. A game that I'm sure they feel like, you know, we should have had. And then they go to Como, and then Missouri whacks them 83-75. So they lose both games that week. And then Texas comes in, and it's a narrow win. They get Texas by 3. You know, Texas, a good team, not a great team. They host number one Auburn and get beat by 10. And then they bounce back there again. So you're kind of mired in, you know, some mediocrity there. But you're playing ranked teams for the most part. And then the one non-ranked team or unranked team you played was Texas, and you get them by 3. And then you get Kentucky. And Kentucky defensively maybe hadn't been what they should be to truly contend. But Ole Miss gets them by 14. And you know what a big deal it is to beat Kentucky in basketball, here, there, or anywhere. They go to LSU and kind of a crazy finish to that game. They initially called that final basket interference. They review it. There was no question that it was a legal play, and they did reverse the call. And as much as we don't like that, it was the right call. So rather than go to overtime, Ole Miss wins the game. I think Ole Miss had LSU had 0.3 of a second or something. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, it's a waste of everybody's time. But they give them the desperation heave. Yeah, part of it, I guess. But, and Ole Miss had every chance to fold in that game. It really felt like LSU had control up until the very end. Like they like a 10-point lead. They'd narrow it down a little bit. LSU would take it back out. But, it says a lot about Ole Miss. I mean, to go on the road and to be able to hang in there and win that game. They go to South Carolina and win by 4. And, again, as bad as things have gone for South Carolina, they have been one of the toughest outs at home. They really have been. Everybody that's gone in there, they get up to play, and Ole Miss gets them by 4. And, of course, you'd love to have seen Ole Miss lose because, you know, that's part of the rivalry. But, again, they go through that stretch there where things aren't great. Now they've won 3 in a row. And you take it back a little bit. They've won 4 of the last 5, the one loss to number one Auburn. So Beard's got them playing well. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And to be honest with you, the schedule is somewhat favorable. But I tell you this. Once you get through Vanderbilt, and that's been tough too, you got to go to Auburn. Then you get Oklahoma coming in, should be a dub. Tennessee's coming in. That could be an interesting game. Then you got to go to Florida to close it out. So some winnable games, I think, at home and some road games that could be rather interesting. Let's just kind of take a quick look inside the numbers here. Let's see if we can get all this pulled up for you. That's what I'm here for, to save you the click work, right? So Ole Miss averaging 78 points a game, giving up 68, so outscoring just under 10. Shooting right at 45% as a team, allowing 42. 35% from beyond the arc, and I think maybe that's maybe less than you would expect because they do like to shoot the 3, and maybe they're not the same proficiency that maybe it's been billed, but they are a team that can get really hot, and that's kind of what happened against Kentucky. Let's see here. Shooting 73% from free throw, that's a good percentage. They're not rebounding well. And when you can't rebound, you better shoot it well. And that's kind of been the difference. When they've shot it well, they've won. And that's not a hot take. But they're not a great rebounding team. They're getting out-rebounded by nearly 100 boards on the season. So about 4 per game. And the way that we have played here as of late, we're going to have to rebound well, give ourselves some second offensive opportunities, but kind of give them a one-and-done situation. If we can win the glass here, and we should, it makes for a tight ball game. We really need Cam Matthews to have a big ball game. You know, Cam just hadn't quite been himself here as of late. You know, Keyshawn Murphy has kind of been the straw that's been stirring the drink. We're going to need another double-double out of him. We really need to find a way to win this ball game. We truly do. They're handing out 15.3 assists, allowing 13. So just a difference of about 2. Turning the ball over not quite as much as they were earlier in the year in the conference slate. Just 8.7 a game, but they're forcing 15. So, I mean, it's almost double, right? I mean, so it's like the margin is plus six, but, they're doing a good job taking care of the basketball and then kind of forcing some turnovers. Points off turnovers, 16, almost 17 for Ole Miss and just 9 for their opponents. And that's a statistic that matters. 228 steals, and then they've only had 140 again. So, again, Ole Miss, taking care of the basketball. You know, blocks are about the same. Look at some individual numbers. We'll look at conference play to kind of give us a better idea of how everybody has played here as of late. Sean Padula, and you know, this is a guy you look at sometimes too, and I think he's more athletic. And I mean it's in the kindest way I can. I think he is a better ball player than maybe he appears. Maybe that's the best way to put that. I mean, because you look at him, you say, he doesn't look especially athletic, and then you look up and he's knocked like 3 or 4 3-pointers down in a row. This guy can really shoot the basketball. 42% from the floor and almost 39% from beyond the arc. Has done a really good job for them. Really done a good job. Leads them with 72 three-point attempts and 28 makes in conference play. Jamin Brakefield, a guy they've been expecting a lot from. He has come off the bench more times than not in conference play, but averaging 13 points a game, which is second only to Padilla. Malik Dia is a guy that really has kind of come into his own in SEC play. He's averaging 12.9 points a game in a dozen games, averaging about 24 minutes. And they will run you about, maybe 6 or 7 deep in SEC play. Kind of got their rotation settled. Matthew Morrell, you know, again, feels like he should be a doctor by now. He's been there forever and a day, it appears. Of course, hit some big shots in the ballgame against Mississippi State. He's actually, in conference play, been their leading free throw shooter with 81%, averaging 11.7 points a game, and has done a really good job on the defensive glass, pulling down 42 rebounds. Diaz had the most with 56. Yeah, he is willing to get out there and crash the boards. Dre Davis is a guy that, again, has kind of emerged in conference play, is a very solid contributor. And, again, you look at this, guys, of the five regulars, four of those five, you know, Brakefield hadn't been a starter, but they have five players that are averaging double figures in SEC play. So, yeah, very, very well-rounded team. Jalen Murray, a guy that's come off the bench, he got a handful of starts, too. You know, he's just beneath it at 8.2 points per game. And so they're getting good bench play. There's no question about it. So we're going to have to play really good defense in this ball game, and we're going to have to get out and defend the perimeter. In their home gym, they're going to make threes. And it's not just because of familiarity with the rims. You know, they're going to have a very partisan crowd there that just kind of, you know, just kind of leads the emotional charge. And so we're going to have, we got our work cut out for us here. And can we win the game? Yes. Can we go up there and get beat by 20? Yes. And I think every bit of that is going to boil down to how well we rebound on the defensive end. And we need there to be some defensive opportunities. We need to get out there and force some difficult shots. And that's been easier said than done for Mississippi State here as of late. But it is a rivalry game. Chris Jans is a tremendous basketball coach. He will have the team up and prepared. Now, whether we go out and execute that game plan at its highest level of efficiency, I don't know that. You know, I don't know if we're going to do that. But I do believe that Chris Jans will have your team ready to play. I know that you guys are excited, and it's one of those things, too. It's not just because it is Ole Miss. You'd love to be able to sweep them, but, you know, this is a net climbing type game for us. So 5 p.m. tip tonight. It'll be broadcast on ESPN2. If you can't make it, and I know some of you don't like to make that trip, we encourage you to tune in and be a part of that. And if things don't go well, you can always change it, right? There's always Netflix or Hulu, whatever you're watching these days. But, yeah, this is a huge ball game. Really, in Mississippi, the totality of State's season, it never boils down to one game. But as well as Ole Miss is playing, being able to have two wins over them would be rather significant, not just for in-state bragging rights, but when you begin to think about the resume-building opportunities. Bulldogs back in action at Humphrey Coliseum on Tuesday. Now, switching over to the women's side of things, guys, did you watch that ball game at Vanderbilt? I was busy for a while and then put it on, you know, in the fourth quarter and watched the both overtimes. What a great effort by the Mississippi State ladies in a game we had to win. And I friends of mine said, I didn't expect them to go beat Vanderbilt. And you know what? I don't know that I did either. I thought we were capable. But Shea Ralph has done a great job at Vanderbilt. We talked about that. We previewed the game. There's been a resurgence under Shea Ralph. And, But it was a great game for us. And we many times we could have folded, and there were times we looked like it was slipping away. And what do you know? Medina Okot's like, guys, y'all just kind of climb aboard here and let me carry us to victory. I thought her and Prater were incredible down the stretch. And we talk about Medina, 21 points, 23 rebounds. And then Ja'Kayla Jordan gives you 21 points. Chandler Prather, 11 and 9. And Montague, man, a couple of big turnovers late, but man, she was a bully on defense. 15 points and 12 rebounds. I just felt like we were the more physical team. And I think that our physicality and level of athleticism really bothered them. We really struggled from beyond the arc, 2 of 27. But, you know, when you're pulling down 65 rebounds, I mean, somebody's missing a lot. We out-rebounded them by 22, and every one of those mattered. And just, you know, just down the stretch there, you know, the free throw, it becomes a free throw shooting contest at times. And, we, you know, you get a lead there, and you put them in a position where they have to foul. You got to convert. And our ladies did. And, you know, so much of that, too, was Prater. And then under Shields, you know, a couple of big free throws late in that ball game. And, you know, it's just part of it. You know, it's a team game, and everybody played a role in this. And I think this is one of the better games that Sam Purcell has coached. It's like you had a good look late to win it in a regulation, and you didn't, and a chance to win it, and you turn it over at the end of overtime. But, you know, the reality of it is we win a game we had to have, and all of a sudden you feel a whole lot better, you know, about where things sit. And so Sunday, the ladies will be at Florida. We're not going to give you a huge breakdown of that. But we have navigated through the final four games here. And I think it is a fair appraisal of things to say, you know what, State should win three of these last four. You start thinking about that aspect of it, that you're at 18 wins now. You pick up three more in conference play. That gets you to 21. And put you in a situation to be 8-8. 21 wins and 8-8 in a Southeastern Conference, that gets you an NCAA tournament. You may even be able to get in at 7. 20 wins and 7-9, maybe. But let's go take care of Florida. And, you know, really quickly, just kind of letting it all come into focus on the women's basketball side of things. You got to win the games you're expected to win. And there, you know, three of these four games, I think everybody would say Mississippi State's expected to win. We're going to go play Florida. They're 3-8 in the conference and 12-13 overall, lost two in a row. So, yes, we are expected to win that game. Well, then you get Texas A&M, who's 3-8 in the conference, 10-13 overall, and they've lost five games in a row. Yes, you're expected to win that game. Auburn is 3-9, 12-13. You destroyed them when they came to your place. Now, Johnny will have them up. But they've lost two in a row. So, yes, you're expected to win that game. And I understand there's a couple of road games in there. And then there's Texas leading the conference who's won nine in a row. So you're not expected to win that game. So I know it's going to be an emotional return with Vic Schaefer coming back, and it's going to be weird for all of you to see him with that orange tie on. I'm going to encourage you to listen to Boys to Men's End of the Road because of that breakup ended a long time ago. And, yes, it's time to move on. But our focus now is this next week, right? You win Sunday, and then you get the midweek off, and then you get the next Sunday. So you could be a 20-win team before Texas comes in here, right? That would be absolutely outstanding. And then you go ruin Auburn Senior Day. And, again, you win three of these last four, and that's how significant that thing was. It gives you a chance to realistically finish 500 in the league when that was looked to be a real problem here at various points. And, you know, again, true road games were 5-5. We got two left that are probably the most, outside of the Missouri game, probably the most realistic road win opportunities for us. So, again, congratulations to Sam Purcell and the staff. And let's go take care of these next couple. Let's go take care of Florida, and then we'll look ahead to Texas A&M. But, again, a chance for us to be 20-8 when Vic and those guys come to town, those ladies, pardon me. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none. If you're bringing a large group of friends or family to town, that's the place to stay. economically feasible too, because rather than go out and get five or six hotel rooms, you can have everybody together under one roof. And that's the better part of it, right? It's the recreation time when maybe you don't have as much going on. So it's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, so you can go enjoy the ball game, do your tailgating right there. Makes life a lot easier with that full-service kitchen. Got the wet bar there if you're so inclined. The great back porch area, the fire pit area, so many amenities available to you. You can peruse those by Googling Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page comes up. You can check them out. Also, some booking options will pop up. You can book through Airbnb. You can book through VRBO. But if you want to save some money, and I'm all about that, you can book through the Evolve website with promo code BSR10. That's beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to our show, so you get a discount to stay at the premium location in the Golden Triangle, where it's a work group, a friend group, a family group. I can smell those Saturday morning cinnamon rolls right now. Also open through the week, so if you've got a group that needs to come up here and get some work done in the Golden Triangle, they can be centrally located just out past the Highlands off 182. Be sure and check it out today. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, let's take a quick look back at the first day of baseball season. Number 8, Georgia, takes care of Quinnipiac, probably the funnest school name to say in Division I sports. Paul Farley, the starting pitcher, their Friday night guy, 5 innings pitched, just 3 Ks, so a pitch to contact guy for sure. But, you expected them to win. You didn't expect them to go the full 9, but they did. But Georgia jumps all over, 5-0 in the first inning, and just kind of coasted there. Not so fun in Fayetteville. I think this Arkansas team will be good because of Dave Van Horn, but they don't have a real star in this lineup. They may argue with that. I just don't think offensively they are going to live up to expectations, as some would suggest. But the Razorbacks 2-0 yesterday, and they had the kind of the crazy game there as they went 10 innings. You know, they had the one game they win 14-2. In the opener, and then the second half of a doubleheader, Washington State nearly has this thing won. They score a run there in the 10th to take the lead there. Pitched it pretty well. Again, I think that speaks, you know, kind of Arkansas's Heckle and Jekyll, or Jekyll and Hyde, no matter which fantastical comparison you want to go with. But Washington State gets walked off in the 10th. The moment was just too big for him. It was. But just 3 hits in the ballgame. Or excuse me, 6 hits. They went 3-2. It was 2-1 in the 10th. The box score looks a little funky. But 3-2 winners are Arkansas with 6 hits in the game against a Washington State team, even though from the Power 4, was not very good last year. Of course, your Bulldogs sweep the doubleheader. Lipscomb goes to Kentucky, and that's an abbreviated game. The Wildcats 11-0 winners. Lipscomb, of course, also from the Metro Atlantic. LSU all over Purdue Fort Wayne. And apparently they did not agree to the mercy rule. LSU trying to rack up some stats here. Guys, this ball game was over in the second inning. It was 7-0. And then you look up into 6, it's 12-0 after 7. And they continue to play the full 9. So 14-0 winners is LSU over Purdue Fort Wayne, a team I think won 17 games last year. Oklahoma, 11-3 winners in 9 over Lehigh. Kyson Witherspoon, their lone returning weekend guy, worked on Friday night. That's expected to be the case. I'm kind of glad we get them early. They're a well-coached program. Maybe don't have the talent that they had a couple years ago. Of course, they played for a NAFL championship in 2022. It's been a little different. They lost a lot of pieces from last year's team. So, again, I'm glad we're getting them early, but they get Lehigh. And, again, they have to go the full 9 to do it. Penn State and Missouri. Penn State out there in the Puerto Rico Challenge absolutely embarrasses Missouri. I think Missouri is looking at an 0-3 weekend, and I don't know that they'll win a half dozen games in the SEC this year. It's tough to go up there and play at times, but Penn State, not a great team, and they shut them out. Mizzou just 2 hits in the ballgame. Blake Simpson, second baseman from Mizzou, is a 1-for-3 hitter on the day. I mentioned on the jeanspage.com message boards, the South Carolina and Sacred Heart series could be interesting. Now, it took some time. Took some work in the late innings. But, guys, this was a 3-3 ball game after 6. The Gamecocks go on to win 5-3, partially because of 3 errors made by the Sacred Heart defense. Sacred Heart also from the Metro Atlantic. This could be – I won't be surprised if the Gamecocks drop a game to them. Arizona and Ole Miss, a good win for Ole Miss. I mean, hey, Hunter Elliott goes 5 innings pitch, 3 Ks, 3 walks. The first start he's had really basically 2 years. Ole Miss expecting a lot from him. And this Arizona team last year, you know, they were, you know, won the Pac-12, won the Pac-12 tourney, and ended up hosting. But it's 2-1. It was a 2-0 ball game until the 8th. Arizona scratches a run across after Elliott's out of the game. But just 11 hits in the ball game combined between the two in the Shriners Children's College Showdown out there in Arlington. Tennessee makes quick work of Hofstra, 15-0. Hofstra just one hit. Liam Dole, former Ole Miss hurler, goes 5 innings pitch, 11 Ks. Good first start for him. And, of course, you know, Ole Miss could certainly use him. Kentucky loses the second game of their series against Lipscomb. And, again, we get Kentucky down here later in the year. Lipscomb wins 3-1. That Kentucky team going to look much different than what you saw last year. It was a dream year in Lexington last year. I think this year will kind of be a return to regular form. As long as Nick Mangione is there, they're going to be kind of a hard-knuckle type club. But, you know, Kentucky scores. They're only running a game in the 9th inning. Alabama and Bradley. Bradley actually jumped out to a big lead in this ball game. I say big. They jump on Alabama pitching 3-0. You know, a lot of people are like, hey, this Alabama pitching staff is going to be great. I just don't see it. I think they'll be good. I don't think they'll be great. But Alabama gets right back to it. They take a 4-3 lead after 2 and then push that out to 7-3 there in the 4th. They ultimately win 10-6. Bradley made it look a little better late by scoring 3 in the 9th, but Alabama wins game 1. Florida takes care of Air Force. It takes the full 9. Liam Peterson gets the start, works 6 innings, 11 Ks, does not allow a run as Florida shuts out Air Force 7-0. Gator pitching limited the Falcons to just 3 hits. Oklahoma and Lehigh had that doubleheader the second game. They 13-3 winners. They mercy rule them in the 8th. They walk it off with 4 in the 8th. Jason Walk, the talented center fielder for the Sooners, 3-for-6 in the ballgame. So they'll look to wrap up that series with a sweep. Texas A&M, I watched a little bit of this last night. This A&M offense is expected to kind of pace the country. Not a great start. Just 5 hits in the ballgame, and going to the bottom of the 6th, Elon leads 2-0. And so they get 3 in the 6th to take the lead and then add an important insurance run there at the 8th. But just 5 hits for this Aggie offense. Blake Binderup had a pair of them, so 2 of the 5 hits and a home run attributed to just one player. A couple errors in the game from A&M as well. But, Mike Gurley's a first-year coach, and you've got the most talented roster. So there's a lot of, maybe a lot of pressure that comes along with that. You know, that's important to understand. You know, with great expectations comes a lot of pressure. But A&M wins 4-2. Auburn, and I don't know if you guys know the Cade Bellew, center fielder from Auburn, lost his mom yesterday to cancer. And then hit a home run in her honor later in that ballgame. I think that is super cool, man. And the reception that he got from his teammates was very special. Very, very special. And it's like we think so much about, hey, these guys are just here to entertain us. But they are young people that have real lives and at times have very difficult things that they have to experience. And this is one of them. I mean, losing your mother. Probably the most traumatic thing that could ever happen in your life, no matter what age you are. But to be in college and then I know that Cade would probably tell you that his mom would want him to play, and he did. And the smiles on the faces of his teammates after that home run was very special. So if you can find that video on social media, I'd encourage you to watch it. But four win winners over Holy Cross. Auburn pitching limits Holy Cross to just two hits in the ballgame. Cam Tilly gets the win for them in relief there, just throwing a couple of innings. But Texas, you know, a lot of people are, you know, talking about Texas. And I think much of that talk is just respect for Schlossnagel. I don't think this Texas team is going to be as good as some people project. I do think they're going to be good. I don't think they're Omaha good this year. We'll see. Max Bellew, the Big 12 player of the year, now an SEC guy, is back. He gets two of Texas's nine hits in the ballgame. He goes 2 for 5. Louisville wins it in 10, 2-1. And that's a good thing for me, right? And a good thing for Mississippi State, right? Because, you know, the Louisville program and Mississippi State program are very closely aligned because of the head coaches being great friends. And so I'm sure we'll get some advanced scouting from our friends at Louisville that will help us against Texas when they come in here for the SEC opening series. Vanderbilt struggled a bit last night, but found a way to hold on. They get up 4-0 in the ballgame against Grand Canyon, who is a solid mid-major. Nothing against those guys at all. And they score 3 and 6 to make it interesting. The Vanderbilt bullpen makes it kind of, you know, stand up there. But Vandy wins 4-3 in the ballgame. Grand Canyon also had 3 errors in the ballgame that were part of it. Now, looking at top teens, and we talk about upward mobility. Like, of course, State needs to take care of business on Sunday. But some teams around us have lost, so there may be a little upward mobility in the polls. Not a lot, but kind of looking at some upsets. UC Irvine beats Nebraska 10-5. Nebraska was ranked 24. Of course, Ole Miss beats Arizona, who was 21. Texas at 19 loses. And then there's State at 18. Number 17, Oklahoma State, dropped a crazy game to Clemson, 6-5. Clemson and Oklahoma State, a top 15 or top 20 matchup. Clemson ranked 15th in the country. And then Duke, number 11, Duke, loses to Cincinnati 8-3. Nothing fluky about that at all. And then Virginia, the number 2 team in the country, they're upset in 11, 5-4 by Michigan. Yeah, so 5 teams in your top 25 lose, or excuse me, 6 teams in your top 25 lose. 3 of them are ranked ahead of Mississippi State. So maybe, again, there's some mobility for us. And, again, you never know how the rest of the weekend is going to play out. But that's kind of how life works, you know. Looking at today's action before we kind of wrap this thing up, I got to go work the spa some today. The wife's happy about the rain out now. LSU and Purdue Fort Wayne, that'll get started around 1 p.m. today. Your pitching matchups, Zane Danielson and Anthony Ianson. That's a transfer that we're on a little bit. Washington State and Arkansas will wrap up their series. They begin at 11 today. Georgia and Quinnipiac, you can say it, it's fun. They'll get together at 11 a.m. Central. Air Force and Florida, game 2 of that series, played at noon Central. And you can watch all these games on the SEC Network Plus if you're looking for some baseball. Alabama and Bradley will first pitch it at 1. Justin LeBron already 667 average and 5 RBIs. 1 p.m. today, Sacred Heart in South Carolina will play game 2. How about Steak Newman from Sacred Heart? That's a name you didn't expect to hear. Steak Newman. Yeah, get after it, Steak. Lehigh and Oklahoma will wrap up their series today. That's a 2 p.m. first pitch. Elon and Texas A&M could be a fun one to watch, 2 p.m. Air Force in Florida also going to play at 3. So it looks like it's a doubleheader today, I guess. Missouri will take on UConn, which I expect to be in a loss. Grant MacArthur is a guy among the Huskies that is expected to do some cool things this year. Georgia will take on North Carolina, UNC Wilmington. Up in Wilmington, they're playing that, you know, that 3 games or 4 games among 3 teams. Hofstra in Tennessee will get going at 3 p.m. Holy Cross in Auburn at 4. Ole Miss versus Texas tonight. That could be a fun one to watch, too. It's 7 p.m. First pitch. And then Vandy will take on number 24, Nebraska. We're pulling for Nebraska there. They lost yesterday, so then they could upset Vanderbilt. But at the end, you know, the only poll that counts is the last one, and that's the one that we hope to be number one in. You know, that's what matters most. And so, again, today is the day off. We'll enjoy watching a little college baseball. But most importantly, the most important thing today is Mississippi State Ole Miss on the men's side. So let me finish up, and I'm going to get dressed and head down to the spa and help the bride. And through Sunday, you can still take advantage of our Valentine's Day special, two floats for $99. It's been an incredible promotion. But I hope, ladies, that you took your gentleman somewhere special for Valentine's. You still have an opportunity to do that. And maybe, guys, if you didn't, maybe get her the gift that she really wanted, you can give her a unique experience. Dial 662-268-7601. And speak directly to my wife, Dana. We can get you guys scheduled to come in. It's a busy day today. I think we got about 20 floaters today. So I got to go up there and help out a little bit. You know, that's one of the reasons we didn't get to show done yesterday because of the doubleheader. But we're getting it done early today, so we have a chance to go do some work at the other business. We love your support. And if you hadn't done so, go to dirtynoblebook.com. All of my sports titles are there, in addition to When the Bottom Falls. And all seven of my books are carried at Campus Bookmart. I'll be there later today to sign from 1 to 3. But if you can't make it, be sure and order online at dutynoblebook.com. And always come join us over at Gene's page, the best place to stay. Excuse me, the best place to find Mississippi State information and the history of Al Gore's internet. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.